condition you so that you associate psychology class and skeleton socks. How about that? Good? You remember that? All right, good. So next week, you're all going to be looking for skeletons, but it might surprise you with some other funky socks. Oh, I'm losing my mind. Okay, on that happy note, say goodbye to your technology. Focus back here for more exciting stuff on learning. Are we good? All right. Operant conditioning. Okay? We talked about classical conditioning. It's one type of learning. Now we're moving on to a second type. I can assure you, everyone here understands this even better than any ideas you had about classical conditioning. Okay, I told you, you understood it, but you had to deal with the goofy terms. This one is even more known. How many people here are parents? Okay. The rest of you can play along too, because we've all been parented, right? So we have experience with parenting or being parented. That is the best example in the world of operant conditioning, parenting. This is also associative learning, and as I mentioned before, this form of learning is you pairing behavior and the behavior's outcome. That's what you're associating. In classical conditioning, you're associating two things. In operant conditioning, you're associating behavior and its outcome. Now up here it says behavior has consequences. I just was saying behavior has an outcome. I did that intentionally. Because some people associate the term consequences with like bad stuff. There's going to be a consequence for this. Sounds like you're getting in trouble, right? So even though consequence simply means outcome, right? There's going to be a result. People associate it in their own mind with something bad happening. We're not there yet. Operant conditioning, you associate doing a behavior with it having an outcome, good or bad. Okay, so even if you wanted to, you can scratch off consequences and put outcome or result. That's probably a better word. So we are going to talk about all of these wonderful things. Positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, positive punishment, negative punishment, schedules of reinforcement slash punishment. Aye, aye, aye. Lots of terms. Lots more terms. Stupid, confusing sometimes. Never forget, you understand these principles. Now we just have to label them with the correct term. That's all tonight really is about. Showing you the terms to label the experiences you've already had. I'm starting at the bottom on this one and working my way back. Thorndike's Law of Effect. Thorndike's Law of Effect. It says two things. The two things that make up Thorndike's Law of Effect. Reinforcement increases the chance you'll do a behavior again. And punishment decreases the chance you'll do a behavior again. Simple idea. And you know this. If you get rewarded for a behavior, you'll probably do the behavior again. If you get punished for a behavior, you probably shouldn't do it again. That's it. Those two ideas together make up Thorndike's Law of Effect. Once again, you know this. That just makes sense. I'm just telling you, it's Thorndike's Law of Effect. Okay?
I'll get it. We're good.
We're good. I'm not too sure about you, but we're good. See, words are very powerful things.
Thorndike's Law of Effect. This actually came about like 1898.
So we're going way back. Thorndike's Law of Effect became the basic idea that a guy named B.F. Skinner used. B.F. Skinner is the operant conditioning guy from the 30s and 40s. Thorndike's Law of Effect, 1898. Reinforcement increases the chance you do a behavior. Punishment decreases the chance. A quick aside. It's important. I'll give you a simple example. When we talk about operant conditioning, there's one quick term I want you to know, and that's shaping. When we talk about shaping, we use a big fancy term called successive approximations. Aye, 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 what the hell are you talking about? A simple example to demonstrate the idea of successive approximations. Let's teach your dog how to roll over. You look at your dog and say, roll over. And you know what it does? It's going to stay. Initially, that doesn't mean a damn thing. What does that mean to the dog? What things do you have to teach the dog first? Before it can lie down. Most dogs don't just fall straight down, right? What do you teach them to do before they lie down?
Sit.
They sit, right? You teach the dog to sit. Then you teach the dog to lie down. Then you got to try and teach it how to roll, right? So you start doing things like this, and the dog's like, hey, what are you doing? It's lying there. I'm lying down. I did what you wanted me to do, damn it. What's this? Right? So you kind of grab a paw and try, right? Each step of the way, sitting, lying down, kind of getting rolling-like behavior, you reward it each time. You have to reward the sitting down to get it that far. Once it's got that, you teach it to sit. Then you teach it to lie down. You reward it for that. Then the rolling over part. Once it's lying down, you say roll over. You kind of grab the underside paw and kind of and it gets up onto its back and it's wriggling close enough. Give it a reward. You're rewarding parts that ultimately lead up to the whole behavior. Successive approximations. When you're teaching your kids complex type behaviors, teach them when they're little how to clean their room, right? Tell them how to put things away. They'll just stick it on the shelf. Close enough. You can give them a little bit of praise for that. And then you teach them. Well, next time I want you to stand the books up like this. So the next time they do it, and they do it that far, and you give them a room. You're building up behaviors that will ultimately lead to clean room, right? Successive approximations. Having said that, here we go. The main terms. I'm going to teach you four terms. Positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, positive punishment, negative punishment. Before we get there, I'm breaking this down into the positive, negative, and then the reinforcement and punishment. We're going to distinguish those four things because those four things are going to give us our terms. You need to eliminate two words from your vocabulary just for the moment. You need to get rid of ideas like good and bad. Throw those in the garbage for the moment. Positive does not equal good. Negative does not equal bad. I want you to think more in terms of math. Positive equals add, negative equals subtract. Okay? When we're using positive and negative reinforcement, positive and negative punishment, positive means that we're adding something to you. And that should influence your behavior. Negative means we're taking something away from you. And that will influence your behavior. I'm not even saying how it's going to influence your behavior. Okay? Positive, we add something to you. Negative, we take something away.
With the negative, can you give an example of that?
I will. Okay. They're coming. These are the building blocks of the definitions. Examples are coming. Reinforcement and punishment. We already looked at this kind of with Thorndike's Law of Effect. Reinforcement. Desirable result. Reinforcement. Your behavior is followed by a desirable result. And what would Thorndike say? That increases the chance the behavior will be repeated. Punishment. Your behavior is followed by an undesirable result. And that should decrease the chance you do a behavior. So now we have these four terms, positive, negative, reinforcement, punishment. Now we got to combine them. When we talk about reinforcement, now this is where your wording and my wording are a little different. So on this slide, you're going to have to doctor them a little bit. So just have a quick look and compare. Sorry, you're going to have to, again, you're going to have to take a little more notes than what's there. Positive, add. Reinforcement, increase the chance of behavior is repeated. So, you do something. I give you something pleasant as a result. Chances are you'll repeat that behavior. I'm going to step away from this slide for just a moment and get you to do something in the margin to maybe help with this. In the margin, I want you to make just a little heading that says things I like. Sometimes I do this on the board, but there's always potential for that getting a little bit crude and lewd, so we'll just have you do it on your own page. Under that little heading, I want you to jot down some things you like. Anything. I like pizza. Pizza is the perfect food. I like music. I like money. Jot down some things that you like. I like football. I want you to make a second list. Things I don't like. Personally, I don't like the phone. I'm kind of like the Grinch. I don't like noise, noise, noise. I don't like bullshit.
Bless you.
So what don't you like? Now that you've got your two little lists, how many of you had money? I know I said it, but anybody write down money for things you like?
Oh, right, I'll do it.
Imagine this. Each time I ask a question in class, I tell you, if you have something relevant to say in response to the question, raise your hand, say your thing, and I will give you $5. Mm-hmm. So when I ask questions in class, I am going to reward you with $5 when you raise your hand and have something relevant to say. It will not take long before there will be a sea of waving hands in this classroom. Why? Because you're getting paid. Exactly. I didn't ask anything else, and none for you. By the way, that just I ain't gonna happen. I'm not paying you for a damn thing. addition of something pleasant. Look at your list of things you like. In response to participating in class, the behavior is participating in class. If you got more of the things you like out of that, wouldn't you participate in class more? Look at the list of the things you don't like. So now we're going to flip down to negative reinforcement. This is one that screws people up all the time. Probably because they see negative and they think bad, which I told you is wrong. Get rid of the word bad. Okay. Negative reinforcement. Reinforcement means we're increasing the chance you do a behavior again. Negative simply means we're going to remove something. What should we remove? Well, maybe something you don't like. I don't like the phone. Any behavior that gets rid of the phone makes me happy. I will do that behavior over and over and over again. Why? Because it gets rid of the bloody phone. Any behavior that removes pain is more likely to be repeated. If you have a headache, and you do a temple massage. If you have a headache and you do a nap, If you have a headache and you take Tylenol, whatever the behavior is that gets rid of the pain you didn't want, negative reinforcement. Take away something you don't like, that increases the chance you'll do the behavior again. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, this one is a little personal for me, because I read my daughter reports from school.
Okay.
And it's just recent, actually. She scored, I seen on the report that she scored well in maths. And then for social skills, she didn't do well. That one was verbally reported to me.
Okay.
And I discovered that although she scored well in maths, the report later at the back of it shows that points was taken.
Okay.
From the maths, because she did not do well in social skills.
Okay.
So my thing was, she's too even little to have that consciousness that you're taking points from
maths.
Why don't you let that be and find something else to remove for that misbehavior? So I want to ask that question. Is it appropriate, is that correct to take points from something she did well?
It seems to me that those two things are unrelated, math and social skills. That seems curious to me. I'm in no position to say anything about the teacher or anything like that, so I'm not going to. But I want to be clear that in that case, right, what you're describing, that's not negative reinforcement, right? Negative reinforcement is taking something away that you don't like. Well, you like to get points, right? You like to get good grades. You like to get credit in school. If they take that away, that's different, right? This is us removing something aversive from you. Points are not aversive. Okay, so I just wanted to make that clear in that example. We'll talk more about that in just a second. It's a better example of a different thing. Before we move on to punishment, one last thing about reinforcement. That list you made of things you like, let's just look at those as reinforcers. Money is a good example, whatever it is you enjoy. Did anybody here write down food? Anybody here write down sleep? Okay. There's a difference between things like food and water and sleep and things like money and sex. Okay? Primary reinforcers are inherently valuable. They meet a basic need, something we would call a requirement. You must have water. You must have food. You don't have them, you're dead. You must have sleep, or you're dead. Okay? Even go back to Abraham Maslow and the hierarchy of needs, the thing I told you really isn't all that useful, but those basic needs, you got to meet them, or you die. Primary reinforcers meet those basic needs. You could even say that belongingness and love, that sort of social bit, for human beings, that's a pretty basic need. You could even say just connection with some other individual in a social sense might maybe fit here. Secondary reinforcers, that's everything else. Everything. A great example of a secondary reinforcer, by the way, secondary reinforcer is something you learn has value. You don't have to learn that food has value. You don't have to learn that water has value. You don't have to learn that sleep has value. You need to learn that money has value. Anybody here have a $20 bill? $50? Anybody hanging on to Grant? $100? Come on, show us the money. Whatever bill you have in your pocket, look at the bill. It has pictures on it. What is that paper worth? Nothing. $100 bill. Inherent value? Zero. Can't eat it. Can't drink it. I'm not going to put you to sleep. Mm-hmm. It has no value at all. And in fact, if you take an economic class, they'll tell you that. Right? It has, on its face, it has no value. But we learn to have belief in it. We learn that we can trade it for other things, like food and water or other desirable things. Now it has value. By itself, that piece of paper, burn it. Doesn't matter. But you've learned it has value, so you're not going to burn it. Right? Secondary reinforcer, you learn that it has value. Sex. Now, some people, in an evolutionary sense, would say that sex is inherently rewarding, if you think in terms of procreation. But there are people who learn that sex is painful, that it is scary, that it is not pleasant. Okay? Sex is not necessarily inherently valuable. And depending on cultural differences, some places it's almost a taboo. Right? That's learned. It's not inherently valuable. Right? Music is not inherently valuable. You learn that it has value to you. Right? Does that make sense, that distinction? Okay, so now let's look at these four terms. Sorry, the second of the four terms. We did reinforcement already, now we're going to look at punishment. Again, same thing, positive and negative. Positive punishment. Immediately you see. If you think in terms of good and bad, positive punishment? Like punishment is good and no. That's why I said throw those terms out. Positive, add. Punishment, decrease the chance of behavior is going to be repeated. So what must I add to you to decrease a behavior? I need to add something you don't like. Look at the list of things you don't like. Imagine those were getting added to you all the time. You show up to class and you get all those things you don't like. You probably don't want to come to class anymore. You show up to work. And all those things you don't like show up. You probably don't want to go to work anymore. Okay? Negative punishment. Negative. Remove, subtract, take away. Punishment. Decrease the chance of behavior is going to be repeated. So negative, I need to take away something that you do like. Look at the list of the things you like. Imagine having those removed from you. You don't like that. So here, your example of points being taken away, whether or not it's appropriate or not, well, but the points being taken away. You guys in class, let's take that example. When you guys are putzing around writing things on PowerPoint that are irrelevant and sharing notes back and forth, and I give you extra homework for that, that's positive punishment. I'm giving you something you don't like to get you to stop a behavior. Negative punishment. I'm going to take something away you do like. So let's say I start you off with 20 points for attendance. I'm not. But let's say you start off with 20 points for attendance, and each time you are late or absent, I take away 2 points. Lowers your score. That's negative punishment. Parenting 101. Reinforcement and punishment. I don't know. Let me just have a quick peek here. No. Let me just tell you. Anytime your parent ever took away a privilege, you're late tonight, so you don't get the car tomorrow. Privilege removed. That's negative punishment. Positive punishment. You come home late, I add chores to your list of things to do. I'm giving you something you don't like. Why? Because I'm sick of you being late.
But you said, what did you say that she did for the negative? She took away the car?
You're late coming home. So I remove your car privileges. You like the car. You want the car. I just took it away from you. Why? Because you were late. What? I'm trying to make you think twice before coming home late.
I don't like chores either, so how's that positive?
That's exactly my point. The idea of good and bad is not it. It's not about you enjoying it being good. Positive simply means I'm adding something to you, but in this case, I'm adding something you do not like. Why? Because it's punishment. I don't want you to do the behavior again. So when you come home late, I could give you chores. That's positive punishment. I'm adding something you don't like. Or I could go the other way and say, you came home late, so you don't get to use my car. Negative punishment. Ultimately, the goal is the same, which is, I don't want you to be late.
Yeah.
I'm just approaching it two different ways. I can give you something you don't like, or I can take away something you do like.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
But how can a second grade little kid understand that she don't see, probably even don't read that.
Right.
I read it.
In that example, maybe it's not appropriate. Right? And whether or not the strategy is appropriate, it's beyond what this is. It's just understanding these terms. But in that case, is the second grader going to understand? Probably not. Right? So in that case, the strategy being used, it might be ineffective. Right? They might want to try something else. A few more terms for you. Timing and consistency is important when we reward or punish people.
Did you skip some PowerPoint?
This doesn't match what you have?
It does, but.
Imagine, well, let's go back to the example of I want you to participate in class. I want you to raise your hand. So every single time you raise your hand, I pay you $5. Every single time. That's continuous reinforcement. Every single time you do a behavior, you get something out of it. If you have a reliable vehicle, every time you turn the key, the thing starts. That's continuous reinforcement. In fact, you can get so trained by that, right? Continuous reinforcement. Every time you turn the key, the car starts. Every time you turn the key, the car starts. So what happens to you when you turn the key and it goes? For a minute, you're perplexed. Like, what the hell's going on? This is not right. You're baffled by that event. And what do you do immediately? You crank the thing over again. And let's just say, unknown to you, the automotive gremlins got to your car last night. And it's the morning, everything was great yesterday. You get in the car in the morning, you think, you're confused. Why? Because you are so accustomed to it working every single time. So that happened. What do you do right away? You turn it over. But it does the same thing. You're like, oh, wait. You are so trained. What do? A third time. You'll do this over and over and because it works every single time. Your starter's broken. You can try it 100 times. It ain't going to work. Right? You are so, that's continuous reinforcement. Every single time you do the behavior, you get the result you want. Of course, if the starter's broken, well, that's the exception. But the idea there are a few things where, like starting our car, it works every time. But a lot of the time, we need to talk about what we call partial reinforcement. In some cases, we don't get a reward every single time we do a behavior. So we need to consider some other ideas. This is just an example. I don't think you have this, but consider this. Your child is being a pain in the butt at the store. What's more effective? Should you reprimand the child there? Or close to there, like in the parking lot, whatever, do you deal with it when it happens, or do you wait 3 days and then reprimand the child at home? Why not wait 3 days? What's the problem?
Because he thought I already forgot.
Maybe he forgot, whatever. But you just intuitively, right away, you know that's just, what, that doesn't work. Right. All right. So look at a different example. Do you like getting paid every 2 weeks?
No.
Would you rather get paid every day?
Yep. No.
Individual differences here, fine. How about this, though? Most of you are saying, yeah, I like getting paid every 2 weeks. It's predictable, right? You know, you could budget based on, okay, good. What happens, though, if they say, nah, we're going to pay it random? Whenever the spirit moves us, We'll pay it. Maybe it'll be after 3 days. Maybe it'll be after 3 weeks. And it always changes. You never know. You never know when you're going to get paid. But at the end of the year, on average, you've been paid every 2 weeks. But in some cases, it happened every 3 days or every 3 weeks. Or maybe it was after 4 days or after a week and a half. And then 2 weeks and then 2 days. And then and it bounces all over the place. But if we looked at how often you got paid every 2 weeks on average, that wouldn't work so well, would it? Kind of all over the place. So in that case, so you know that the timing of these, it matters. The timing of our rewards and punishments, it matters. How does it matter? Well, I got to give you more crazy making terms. Do not shoot the messenger. I didn't make this crap up. In behaviorism, this is what they do. When we talk about reinforcements or punishments, either way, we can talk in terms of ratio or interval, and then we can talk about fixed or variable. Ratio. Certain number of behaviors have to be performed before you get rewarded or punished. Interval. A certain amount of time passes between when you do the behavior and when you get rewarded or punished. Ratio, number of behaviors. Interval, amount of time that passes. Fixed, doesn't change. Variable, changes. We're going to combine these four terms into four different schedules of reinforcement. A fixed, doesn't change, ratio, number of behaviors before you get rewarded. You have to do a behavior a certain number of times before you get the reward. You must raise your hand and participate 3 times before I'm going to give you the $5. But every 3 times, you're going to get the $5. So on the 3rd time, on the 6th time, on the 9th time, on the 12th time, on the 15th time. Every 3 times, you get rewarded. That's fixed ratio. Could be 5 times, could be 10 times, doesn't matter. It's 5 times, it's 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30. Every 5th and 10th and 15th and 20th behavior, you get rewarded. Fixed ratio. Variable ratio. This one needs a little explaining. Let's go with the example there. Every 5th time you do a behavior. The idea here is that on average, you will be rewarded every 5th time. But it's not going to happen every 5th time. Maybe it's the 2nd time, and the 7th time, and then the 10th time, and then the 20th time, and then the 21st time, and then the 28th time. You go with this over 100 behaviors, and on average, you find out you're getting rewarded every 5 times. It just doesn't happen exactly every 5 times. I know that's silly. It's amazing how a variable ratio schedule will hook people. A great example is slot machines. I'm going to digress and get into this slot machine math for just a second. Imagine a slot machine, but an old-fashioned one. Good old one-arm bandit. It's got 3 reels on it. If we took that machine apart and you looked at each one of those 3 reels, and I'm just doing this to keep the math easy and straightforward. Let's just say there are 10 separate pictures on this reel. The one you really want to come up 3 times in a row is bar, bar, bar. That's jackpot. Okay? That's what you really want. There's one picture of the bar on this first reel, and then there are other pictures on it. All the reels are the same. Put the machine back together. You're going to spin. You're going to play the slot machine. What is the probability? What is the likelihood of that first reel, when it stops spinning, for it to come up with that bar picture?
1 out of 10.
There are 10 pictures on it. Only one of them is the bar. 1 in 10 chance that that one first reel will come up with that bar. Great. But there are 3 reels. And they spin independently. So on the second reel, what is the chance of it coming up with that bar? 1 in 10. Right? That one reel, it spins independently, it's 1 in 10. And the third reel, 1 in 10. Now you got to do the combining. Right? What's the probability with 3 independent reels spinning separately? What's the probability of getting bar, bar, bar? 1 in 10 times 1 in 10 times 1 in 10. It's 1 in 1,000. The probability that you will get that bar, bar, bar on that simple machine is 1 in 1,000. Not a very good probability, is it? So getting the jackpot, pretty unlikely. Now, why you know this, if you know that, right? Or maybe now you get into 5 real ones and oh my god, this is crazy. The chance of getting the jackpot is slim. So why do people stick with it?
Because it can happen. It can happen.
It could happen. Maybe they won before. But if you're playing these machines, a lot of the time they pay you a little bit. So you get a reward a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, right? But it doesn't pay you like every second time. It doesn't pay you every fifth time. It doesn't pay you even every tenth time. But on average, if you played that thing, you know, if you pulled that arm 1,000 times, right, it's going to pay you a little bit on average X number of times. And I don't know what that is because it depends on the slot. But the moral of the story here is you get little bits here and there, right? But it's variable. But if you average it out over time, right? Now let's say we watch one slot machine in the casino, one good old-fashioned one-arm bandit, 3 reels like I described. And we just watch. A bunch of different people are going to play, but we just watch that machine. Do you think it pays out every 1,000th time like clockwork?
No.
If it did, other people would be standing there watching, counting, waiting. And when it was like time number 999, there'd be a fight over who got to play it next. That's not the way it works. It is variable. But if you watched people play that thing for like 1,000,000 pulls on average, it pays every 1,000th time. That's a variable ratio. By the way, just another quick little aside. Slot machines. Well, this is good practice for me, patient. Not very patient guy. There is something called gambler's fallacy. This is the idea that you're due. Oh, I'm due. It's going to come up now. It has to be. And fallacy is a fancy word for bullshit. Not true. Okay? Gambler's fallacy. Let's say we flip a coin. Heads or tails? You're going to bet that it's going to come up tails. What's the probability of that happening? 50-50. So it comes up heads. Darn. You can flip the coin again. What's the probability of it coming up tails?
50%.
Comes up heads. Flip it again. What's the probability of it coming up tails?
The same
50-50. Because they're independent events. The first one doesn't affect the second one or the third one or the fourth one. Comes up heads again. Flip it again. What's the probability? 50-50. Comes up heads again. It's 4 in a row. And you start thinking, has to be tails next. It's got to come up tails next. It's gambler's fallacy. The odds never change. The slot machine, the odds never change. You're never due. In games of chance, the odds never change. Cards, the odds change. That's why people can count cards and if they can get away with it, right? In like a 6-deck shoot or whatever. You remove a card, the card's gone now. That changes the probability of what's left. Slot machine? No. Dice? No. Roulette? No. Those are true games of chance. The odds never change. Gambler's fallacy, you are not due. Bloody addicting, though. Okay?
Anyway.
I agree, it ain't right. Fixed interval. Now we're switching. Ratio, right? Number of behaviors. interval, time that passes between behavior and consequence. Fixed interval means that time never changes. We already used the example of paychecks. You get paid every 2 weeks. How many of you get paid every week? Okay, every 2 weeks. That's more standard. Okay, you get paid every 2 weeks. Never changes, right? You always get paid every 2 weeks. But that amount of time has to pass, whether you're at work or not. Now, in a lot of cases, if you're salaried, you got sick time, you get paid anyway. Right? You don't even have to be there. That wasn't a how-to or a suggestion. Right, paychecks every 2 weeks. Variable interval, a little harder to come up with a solid example. Pop quizzes is a good school example. Have any of you ever had a class where it's in the syllabus and they say there are going to be pop quizzes that come up whenever? Right? But track how the instructor does it. A lot of the time they'll go front end of the course heavy, so they'll give more pop quizzes initially. But there's a set amount of marks set aside for pop quizzes. So if you do 5 in the first 6 weeks, well, you only got 10 weeks left. Chances are you're going to get the other 5 once every other week. Right? You can start tracking their tendencies if you think of it. But pop quizzes, bonuses, these are things. They come up on average after a set amount of time, but there's no sure way to know. What is the point in all of this? It's like, holy shit, Troy, come on. Purpose. If you want to train someone quickly, use a ratio schedule of reinforcement. Start them off with a fixed ratio. You want to really get them started smartly? Go every time. Continuous reinforcement. Then quick change the rules on them. Make it once every third time. Then make it once every fifth time. But you're training them very... Look at your dog. Imagine if you gave it a treat every single time you asked it to do something. You'd be going broke buying treats. So what do? Initially, you train it by giving it a reward pretty much every time. It starts catching on to the behavior. What do? You get cheap. Maybe go once every other time, once every third time, and after a while, you just stop altogether. Right? Why? You start training them. And after a while, you even start to forget. Every once in a while, you give the dog a treat. But if we watched you over a period of weeks, on average, you probably come out to what? Once every fifth time, tenth time, something. That's variable. Get them trained quickly with a fix. You can maintain a pretty steady rate of responding, like slot machines, with a variable. So those get you trained quickly. If you want to maintain it over time, you go with the interval schedule. So train them first with this stuff and then maintain it over a longer period of time. The funny one here is the red line. This is you and your paycheck. Your paycheck happens at the little black marks here. If you notice, what happens? You get paid and you do 3/8 of nothing. And then it gets close to payday. And your productivity increases. You get paid, and it's back to sitting on your thumb. And then it's close to payday. Up you go with the productivity. They're not making this up. Industrial, organizational, psych, career stuff. They study this stuff. Absolutely true.
During the duration of the fixed level, when the person gets rewarded each time.
Yes.
And when you started to slope, and it goes into variable, that should be when the person is having hope that the fixed will come back.
Yes.
Now, and when the person or animal finally realize that it's not going to be that way anymore, does the behavior stop? Or the person keeps, or animal keeps hoping for all eternity?
In a lot of cases, especially with animals, they just keep hoping, right? With animals, with simpler life forms, in fact, this is the way you get them to just keep going. Remember I mentioned a guy named B.F. Skinner?
Yeah.
He did all of this with pigeons, right? You train them initially to get them going, and they do, in a simple way, because they're pigeons, they're simple animals. They start to expect getting it every time. And guess what? They stop getting it every time. So what do? They peck this disc to get food more. They respond more and more and more, and then one comes. They get a food pellet. They go, oh, okay. They will peck like crazy. They'll do this behavior over and over and over. So repetitive. With people? Yeah, once they start figuring out, then I think they're messing with my schedule of reinforcement. Not that they're going to think of that way. But you actually see this curve start to fall off. You want to refresh it? Bump them back to this kind of thing. And they'll respond more rapidly and get back to here. But you're right. In simple life forms, it stays pretty constant. With us, we catch up. Operant conditioning. The prime example, like I said, parenting or being parented. What did your parents do when you did a behavior they wanted you to do again? Your mom would scream if you did something she liked. How do they get you to do a behavior again? Exactly. That's it. They reward you. When you're bad, what do? They punish you. But how do they do it? For punishment, if they gave you something you didn't like, spanking, chores, that sort of thing, positive punishment. If they took something away from you that you did like, negative punishment. If they gave you something you liked to try and get you to do a behavior again, they're using reinforcement, but it's positive. They're giving you something pleasant. When you fall down and you scrape your knee and you have pain and you're crying, parents would do things like kiss it better. You could look at that as positive, right? Reinforcement, they're giving you something you like. But are they trying to increase crime behavior? That doesn't make sense. So what are they really doing? By kissing it better, that behavior by the parent, they're removing your pain. And in doing that, right, next time you fall down, go boom, what are you going to do? Turn to your parent.
You say kiss.
For the kiss the boo-boo, right? Because it removes your pain or it removes your fear. Right? That's negative reinforcement. Great example of negative reinforcement. How many of you have the annoying little ding, ding, ding noise in your car if you don't put your seatbelt on? Any of you put it on just to shut that thing up? Any of you snap it behind you just to shut that thing up? That's not a how-to either. That's bad. Don't do that. Negative reinforcement. You don't like the noise. So what do? Begrudgingly put your seatbelt on. Why? Just to shut that thing up. Well, it's actually a good thing if it's reminding you to be safe. But okay, so a couple of applying psychology examples in parenting and how this stuff works. I have worked with a lot of parents, clinically. I have met a lot of people who say, my kids only listen to me if I yell. And immediately in my head, I know exactly what's going on. The parent has been trained by the child. By the way, those of you with kids or those of you with pets, who's training who? So, what's happening here? Here's you're playing with your stuff. You're leaving it on my floor. And I tell you, pick that up, put it away. Okay. I thought I told you to pick that up and put it away. Yeah, I'm coming. I don't want to have to tell you to pick that up again. Okay, I'm coming. How many times do I have to tell you to pick that up and put it away? Okay, God, get on my back. I'm coming, jeez. God damn it, get over here and pick that up!
I don't have to yell, God.
What just happened? The child did not listen the first 4 or 5 times. Then you yelled and the child did it right away. You were just positively reinforced. You got the behavior you wanted out of that kid. You were positively reinforced for yelling. How many times are you going to have to go through that before you realize, screw it, I'll just yell? Whether you're even consciously making that decision or not. I know exactly what's going on when the parent shows them and says, they only listen if I yell. Right? No, what's actually happening is you need to mean what you say, say what you mean, and follow through. Say it once. If you're being nice, say it twice. And then it just disappears. Oops.
And then, well, where's my toy?
I told you to put it away. You didn't, so I put it someplace. You'll get it back tomorrow. You'll get it back tomorrow. If you follow through with what you say, you don't have to say it very often. So it's very quick and easy if the parent's willing to actually do what the parent says. You don't have to yell anymore.
So would you say that the child is still training you with you? Like, when I tell my daughter, she's two, but when I tell her to do something, sometimes she does a thing where she's just like, whatever, I'm doing it when I get ready. And then I, you know, if it's a toy or something, I say, pick it up, and she doesn't do it, and I say it again, then I bring her to it and tell her to pick it up. So she trained me.
You could look at it that way. You could.
What kind of reinforcement do you call, like, when, like, I had a dad, you know, he could just look at you, you know, give you a look.
Yep.
And you know, what kind of reinforcement was that?
Well, I would need to know what happened when, in a way, you could use a little classical conditioning there, because I'm sure at some point that look was paired with something you didn't like. So you learned real quick. After that, you knew, right. A little of both. You could actually combine classical and operant on that. The second example here, the negative reinforcement trap. Parents will recognize this one right away. You're at the grocery store, and your cute, adorable, wonderful little punk want something. Now, if you haven't done the preventative beating, don't beat your children. If you haven't set things up ahead of time, you're just walking through the store, and your kid wants bloody everything in the store. They want the goldfish crackers, they want the cookies, they want the whatever. Okay? So you're going through, and they really, really want the crackers or the cookies, and you say, no, can't have those, we don't have the money, whatever. No. And the kid gets upset. So the kid starts to get loud and is demanding, no, I have to have these. No, no, I can't get them this week. Sorry. I really want that! And he starts throwing a fit. He's loud, obnoxious, flailing his arms, saying nasty, naughty things, right? And what starts to happen? Well, first of all, your distress level immediately starts to go up as a parent. But then the parent notices something else. Like everyone else in the store looking at you. Like, shut that little shit up. We don't want to have to deal with your bad kid. Right? And some people will even stick their nose where it doesn't belong and start trying to interfere or give you advice or tell the kid. And it's like, you're embarrassed. Right? You're feeling bad. I mean, you're embarrassed. There's shame. And your stress is up. It's like, oh my God. Right? You want to find a place to hide. So all these bad feelings are coming up in you. So what do you do?
Fine, just put it in the cart.
Kid shuts up. Kid got what he wanted. Your pain starts to kind of come down because people stop looking at you, a little less embarrassment, the kid's quiet. That just bit you twice. What just happened? The child was positively reinforced for bad behavior. You gave the child what the child wanted. Why? Because the kid threw a fit. Oops. That's usually not intended, but that's exactly what happened for the child. For you, the parent, you were negatively reinforced. Here's the trap. Negatively reinforced by giving in to the child. What just happened? Your pain went away. Your embarrassment went away. That shame went away. all that noise you didn't like, the kid's bad behavior in public, it all went away. Why? Just give him what he wants. What's the kid gonna do next time he wants something? Throw a fit? What are you gonna do? Give in? Talk about creating a monster? Behaviorism, operant conditioning, 101. Very simple patterns, and actually quite easy to fix if you know these principles. But that one, way more common than you'd like it to be. But that's the negative reinforcement trend. To summarize these two types, and then I'm going to blast us through observational learning. To summarize these two types, what do they have in common? One, we're pairing things. I told you already, classical conditioning, you pair two things, two stimuli. Little Albert, rat, loud noise. Pavlov and the dogs, bell, food. In operant conditioning, you pair behavior and outcome. Number two, in both cases, the environment is ultimately controlling you. In classical conditioning, it's some thing that's controlling you. In operant conditioning, it's the outcome that is controlling you. Number three, both classical conditioning and operant conditioning will not necessarily last forever. They kind of wear off. What I mean by that, take the example of little Albert. Once he's trained to be afraid of the rat, if all you ever do is just put the rat in front of him, over and over and over and over and over and over again, after a while, he will come to realize, even at 11 months old, he'll come to realize that nothing bad happens. And in fact, there's a type of therapy that we do with folks related to that idea called exposure therapy. But you present this white rat over and over and over, and you realize nothing bad happens. So that training of fear wears off. Your parents, they don't always reward you, so you kind of forget to do good things. When's the last time somebody thanked you for using your manners? If you have a spouse who does that a lot, a little child like something strange is going on there. But I mean, really, how often? I mean, when you're a little kid, you get praised for using your manners and saying thank you and please and all that good stuff. And then you just stop doing it. And you know what happens? People forget their manners frequently. Right? Sometimes you got to refresh the learning. Right? Same thing with punishment. You learn to not do things, but when the punishment doesn't really happen very often, you kind of forget and maybe you slide back into the behavior. Those are the three things they have in common. Yeehaw. I'm tired too. I see. Last bit. Classical conditioning, form of learning number one. Operant conditioning, form of learning number two. Final one, social learning. By the way, when we get to the last slide, don't pack up because I still got to tell you about that assignment very briefly. Social learning theory, the name here to know is Albert Bandura. And really what we're talking about is learning simply by watching someone else do behavior. Observational learning. If you're going to learn a new skill, my guess is that you'd want to learn that skill, even if you're just watching. You'd probably want to learn that skill from someone you think is good at that skill compared to somebody who's not good at it. If you're going to learn something from someone, oh, by the way, let me ask you this. Would it matter how I dress? Do you care?
Not me.
Jeans and t-shirts, fine. I show up in like army fatigues. Doesn't matter, right? Hair everywhere. I can do rock. Okay. Right. Do you care? Does that affect my credibility? For some people, it does. For some people, an instructor should be in suit and tie. That's the way it should be. Right? People have ideas. well, what are your ideas? What would make me credible? What makes me believable? What would make me someone you'd want to learn from? This is observational learning. You have ideas about, is the person smart? Are they popular? Are they dressed appropriately? If the person meets sort of your expectation, you're more likely to do the behavior. You're more likely to emulate that person. As well, if you see somebody do something and they get rewarded for it, maybe it's something you might want to try. If all I had to do was go online and sign up at some certain website and $10,000 just magically appeared for me to take home, I bet every single one of you go home and sign up at that website. Why? Because I got something out of it. You'll copy my behavior. Why? Because it worked for me. Okay? That's observational learning. In order for this to happen, you have to actually pay attention. You have to remember what the person did. You also have to be able to copy the behavior. You actually have to be able to do it. If you see me blow through stop signs all the time and get checks in the mail for it, you probably want to do it, but if you don't have a car, right, you can't do it. So you have to be able to reproduce the behavior. And then it helps if that person was rewarded. Albert Bandura, in a very famous experiment called the Bobo Doll experiment. Incredibly simple idea here. Show kids a videotape of an adult playing with this blow-up doll. And the adult is kicking the crap out of the blow-up doll. Then you take those kids one by one. And you give them the chance to go in a room and play with that doll. And guess what? Every single one of those kids did. They went in and they kicked the crap out of that doll. Monkey see, monkey do. They did it again, though. Took a different group of kids, showed them a video of an adult playing with this doll in a nice, gentle way. Let those kids go in and play with it. And guess what? Those kids were nice and they were gentle. As funny as it would be, I think they did. They were not. They copied the behavior. And honestly, I don't have the numbers. I would have to go to the actual study and see the report. I don't remember if there were any that just went in and went and started smacking it around. I don't know. You would think, right? But you show them, they copy it. That's all that study was. Demonstrating very simply social learning. Couple of terms for you. Inhibition. Inhibition, learning what not to do. This is you learning to inhibit or stop a behavior simply by watching someone else basically get in trouble for it. It's funny to watch people who speed. It's funny to be one of the speeders. Hi, how are you? And you see somebody pulled over at the side of the road. And traffic slows way down. The cop's busy. He's not going to magically jump out and get you, too. Zip right on by. What are you slowing down for?
I've seen a couple
of them. Oh, yeah. Sometimes they pair up. And they do tricky things. They're sitting up on ramps and stuff. Check your rear view when you go zipping by. And somebody busts you. When you're a chronic speeder, hi, how are you? You learn. So be very wise. But you learn to not do things. Right? Because it doesn't work out for others. How many of you have an older sibling? Did you ever learn based on their experience?
Yes. What you didn't want to do?
Inhibition. You learn what not to do. If you ever hear the phrase, so I'm going to make an example out of you. Right? What about prison? Right? Getting busted by the cops and thrown in prison. That's supposed to be a deterrent. Right, how much it works, that's a sociological debate for another time. But that's the idea, right? Prison is a deterrent. Right? You don't want to be incarcerated, so don't do that. That's the idea here, inhibition. Flip it over, look at it a different way. You can learn disinhibition. This is learning what you can get away with. So let's talk about those speeders. Hi, how are you? How many times do you actually get pulled over? Never. Well, not never, but
very rarely.
And then you craft up some really nifty bullshit and you get out of it.
So basically, this is when you watch somebody do something and then you go and do it, but you think in your head you're going to do it a different way so you don't get caught.
Possibly, but that's not quite what we're getting at. Basically, here, you watch somebody steal something and there's no bad result. They get away with it. You maybe, especially if you're a kid and easily influenced, you may be more likely to try that behavior. Why? It worked for them. They got away with it. Why can't I get away with it? Okay, so learning what you can get away with. Disinhibition, learning what you can get away with. How many of you have the older sibling who got away with stuff and you did what they did?
But you got caught.
And if you get caught, well, maybe it didn't work out for you, so you don't do it again. Alternatively, you may see your sibling with the inhibition, the previous lad. You see them get in trouble for something, and rather than think, I'm not going to do that, you think, I'm going to do that. Smart.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's not inhibition. Last slide anyway, something to consider based on learning principles, based on social learning principles, modeling. You know the old saying about do unto others as you'd have done unto you? Yeah, kind of the idea. Lead first by example. Gandhi, become the change you want to see in the world. The second point there is a really, this may sting. I'm not looking at anybody, so if I'm talking to you, I don't know. A really crappy parenting strategy is do as I say, not as I do. Essentially, you're wearing hypocrite on your sleeve. And you are modeling for the child a bad behavior. You think simply by saying, don't do that, it's going to work? Kids see pretty much everything. If you're smoking 2 packs a day and you say, don't smoke, it's bad for you, you know what your kid does? You know what thought your kid's having? Your kid's having a WTF moment. Thinking,
what? You're doing it? What?
Who do kids look up to, especially young kids in the average family, who do they look up to most other than their parents? Careful what you model. When you fight like cats and dogs at home, you are modeling shitty conflict resolution. You're modeling bullying. You're modeling aggression. You're modeling just nasty vocabulary and behavior. Don't do that. Do you really think that's going to change it? Last thing tonight. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the behaviorism assignment. Okay, the behaviorism assignment, there are 2 parts. There's multiple choice. And there's this thing called modified true and false. The multiple choice, straightforward, just based on what we talked about tonight. The modified true-false. You're going to read a statement and decide whether or not it's true. If you think it's true, simply circle the T, you're done. Go on to the next one. If you think the statement is false, you think it is inaccurate, circle the F, but you're not done. Once you circle the F saying, it doesn't seem right to me, there's going to be an underlying word or phrase in that sentence. After you circle the F saying, no, the way it's written, it's not right, I want you to look at that underlined part, and I want you to change it so that the statement becomes true. False, because it's not right the way it's written, but then I want you to change that underlined part so that it becomes true. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So those there, I'm actually giving you a 0.5 point for identifying that it's false and then 0.5 point for correcting it, essentially. Okay. It is due next week at the beginning of class. have a good night.
Okay,
no, I'm not taking it.